I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today here on the Ideas Network. We're going to turn our attention now to Wisconsin's maritime history. With over 800 miles of shoreline touching two Great Lakes, it's not surprising that Wisconsin would have a significant maritime history. Joining me is Norma Bishop, the executive director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. The museum chronicles the legacy of sailors, shipbuilders, and submariners, and is home to the World War II sub, the USS Cobia. More than 60 years old, the Cobia is in need of repairs, and the museum is working with a Manitowoc yacht company on this exciting renovation. Norma, thanks so much for joining me today.
Good morning, Judith. Thank you for inviting me.
And Norma, how did you personally get involved and interested in maritime history?
Well, I have a rather checkered career. I spent 21 years on active duty in the Navy, but I was what you call a brown shoe Navy. I was in aviation, not submarines.
Oh, interesting. And so how did you then end up coming to the Maritime Museum?
I'm actually an attorney by training, and I left the Navy, did some litigation work for a while, and then I started my own firm specializing in nonprofit tax-exempt organizations. One of my clients was the Maritime Museum in Santa Barbara. I worked with many, many nonprofits, and I grew to love that so much that when I filled in for their director temporarily when they lost theirs, one thing led to another.
So give us a sense of how maritime industry has shaped Wisconsin's history and how Manitowoc emerged as such a center.
Well, Wisconsin has the most rich maritime history you can possibly imagine. It's even more diverse and interesting, I think, than places people think of first, like the East Coast, because we not only had clipper ships, our lake schooners, we had freighters, we had submarines, we had paddle wheelers, we had Voyager canoes. We have this incredible history that runs throughout the state. And of course, Manitowoc became the focal point of shipbuilding at a time in the early 19th century when Milwaukee and Chicago were building, and the lumber here had to be taken to those places of great construction. We were also instrumental in the westward movement of immigrants. Many, many of the settlers in Wisconsin came as a result of coming to New York, the Erie Canal, the Great Lakes, and finally across Lake Michigan. So in addition to the exploration of Wisconsin by the early French, the voyageurs, and of course, we had wonderful harbors, natural coves, streams, a transport system that was actually explored and established by the Native Americans before anyone else arrived.
And it seems that a lot of people, of course, think of Wisconsin as having a very rich agricultural heritage and
yes.
industry, but an agricultural industry can only grow as much as the products that are produced can be sent to the markets. I'm assuming that there was a lot of water travel that was involved in getting those goods to market.
Absolutely. The population centers were Milwaukee and, of course, Chicago, and many of the products went that way. And then, of course, with the discovery of iron ore in the UP and the Mesabi Range in the upper Great Lakes, that ore had to move to the ironworks and steel mills that were building in other port cities of the Great Lakes.
We're talking with Norma Bishop of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc, and we'd love to have you join the conversation if you want to call 1-800-642-1234. The lines are open, so we'd be happy to get you on. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, and you can also leave a comment on our Facebook page. Now, Manitowoc is especially known for its submarine industry, and 28 subs were produced there during World War II. In fact, the USS Cobia is docked at the museum, and while it wasn't one of the subs made in Manitowoc, it's very similar to those produced there. How did the Cobia come to the museum, Norma?
The Cobia was in service during World War II, had quite an illustrious service. After the war, it served on active duty for a while, and then it was moved to the Great Lakes where it became a reserve training ship. It actually operated in Milwaukee in the 1960s. And many a reserve sailor who went to Milwaukee for training remembers the Cobia fondly. At the time the museum was founded in 1969, the fellows who had actually worked in the yards, built the submarines, and then served on them and returned to Manitowoc to live, were looking for a submarine. And it turned out that either they were all given to foreign countries or they had been scrapped. After World War II, a great many foreign countries received, as the result of treaties, many of our ships, countries like Brazil and Italy and Greece and Turkey. We don't often think of that. Hmm. But Manitowoc-built subs actually went all over the world. So there wasn't one available. They did find the Cobia, and the wonderful thing is that it had been in constant service. It had never been mothballed. It had never been stripped. So the Cobia is the most historically intact World War II submarine in existence. Fortunately, it was ending the end of its career as a training vessel. So it came up to Manitowoc in August of 1970. President Jimmy Carter, who was then a candidate, was there. And there was a wonderful ceremony. Many of the veterans who had built submarines and served on them were the founders of our museum. And that's how the state's first Smithsonian affiliate and the largest maritime museum on the Great Lakes came into being.
And the Cobia was completely restored, and it's actually designated as a National Historic Landmark. But now it's in need of some more repairs, which is not surprising, it being over 60 years old and having been used. I mean, it was a great thing it was used, but I'm sure that added to the wear and tear as well. What's being done right now, and who are you partnering with to have that done?
This is a wonderful story about the shipbuilding industry in Manitowoc and in Wisconsin. Manitowoc has an incredibly rich history of shipbuilding. As I was saying, not only submarines, but schooners, scows, dredges, tugboats. And one of the companies that evolved over time was the Berger Boat Company. Now, that company actually sold the shipyard that became the Manitowoc Yard where the submarines were built. But it went on to continue building wooden boats and then later steel-hulled boats and yachts. Today, it's one of the premier yacht builders in the world. Many, many awards won in Florida and in Monaco. Just glorious yachts. Well, the wonderful story is that although that firm gave up its spot in the yard for a while to one who built submarines, now that company is helping us restore Cobia and doing the work above the waterline.
And I can only imagine that a restoration like that and the original restoration is a pretty large investment. How was the original restoration and now these further repairs funded?
Well, we have at times received grants from the National Park Service, the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and we had been saving our pennies. And believe me, every nickel counts. So we actually started this. Unfortunately, the technology has so evolved. We thought we were looking at a dry dock situation, which is incredibly expensive, very technical.
What are the details of that for people that aren't familiar with it?
Well, it requires towing the vessel to a dry dock, and the nearest one would be in Sturgeon Bay. Now, one of the things we rather regret is that when the Navy gave us the submarine, they took the props off of it. We would love to be able to get underway and actually go out there and submerge and do all kinds of exciting things, but it has no props. So it has to be towed. And towing insurance is expensive. It's a very delicate operation. You have to have that engineered. You have to have the dry dock and the keel block plan engineered. So you're into a lot of money before you even get there.
It sounds like when you see a house being moved
yes.
down the street.
Yes, that's a really great analogy, only we're doing it in the water. So I've gone to a couple of conferences and talked to some Navy contractors and discovered that the technology has so changed that there was a good possibility we could leave the submarine in place, have the work done above the waterline, and then under the waterline. Of course, what's involved is cleaning. And now, of course, we have things like zebra mussels, quagga mussels. We don't have barnacles or saltwater, but we have some pretty destructive invasive species. Those have to be cleaned. Then you have to do an ultrasound testing of the hull to find out if there's corrosion, what the condition of the hull is. You might have to do some welding or repair underwater. The good news is there's two kinds of welding. You can weld actually in the water with divers. And for those types of jobs where you can't weld in the water, you can have a custom-built cofferdam constructed, which is essentially almost like a watertight tube that fits up against the hull of the submarine and then opens up above the water. You put your welders down in there, and you pump the water out, put the welders in, and you can work in a dry environment all the way down to the keel.
So it's like a huge snorkel, kind of.
Yes, exactly. You've got to, I should get you to work on this project. It's like a huge snorkel. That's a great analogy. And then there are now substances that are so advanced that they can be applied underwater. There's one called High Coat that dries, maybe a 3/4 inch of an inch, quarter of an inch thick, and it protects the hull.
We have a call from Rusty in Springstead that I want to get to, but mm-hmm. you can also join our conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. Rachel Owens, our on-air producer today, is waiting to take your calls. And you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. But let's go to Rusty in Springstead. Hi, Rusty.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
If possible, could you go into a little bit of detail as far as what action the USS Cobia had in World War II? And also, is there something online saying how the names of the subs and what active duty they had that were made in Manitowoc?
All right. Thanks for that call, Rusty. Norma?
There is. There were 28 submarines built in Manitowoc. And one of the things I would suggest is that you pick up a book called Freshwater Submarines. I actually brought a copy with me today. The Freshwater Submarines, The Manitowoc Story. That was written by Rear Admiral Nelson some time ago. And I'll have to bring you up to date in a little while about what's happened with some of those. The Cobia had a wonderful, wonderful battle record. Now, what's interesting about the Cobia is that we've recorded many oral histories of its crew members. One of the most compelling stories, and what I like to say about museums, is that they're not just places where we have objects and things and collections. They are places where objects tell the stories of the people who made history. So one of my favorite stories is on Mother's Day of 1945, when a young crew member named Charlie Stewart, who had lied about his age, actually, to enlist in the Navy, he enlisted at 17, was aboard, and the Cobia was driven to the bottom in a depth charge run by a Japanese ship, and they were actually mired in the bottom, in the mud, for 8 hours while they endured a depth charge attack. And Charlie has visited us nearly every summer except for the last 2 summers. We're hoping he comes again this August, and stands in the forward torpedo room where his bunk was and describes what it was like to endure that depth charge attack.
And we will definitely talk more about the history of the Cobia and of those 28 subs that were built in Manitowoc after a break. But I want to let people know that we're talking today about Wisconsin's rich maritime legacy with Norma Bishop, the executive director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. There's more coming up, so I hope you'll stay tuned. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson here today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today, and we're talking with Norma Bishop, who is the executive director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. Are you a World War II buff? Have you visited the Maritime Museum and their restored USS Cobia submarine? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Norma, let's go back to the phones right away and give our callers a chance to get in on the conversation. We have Judy in Racine. Hi, Judy.
Hi. My husband grew up in Manitowoc, and his father painted submarines. And he said that when they were ready to launch one, they would get out of school to be able to watch the launching, and they had to launch them sideways. They didn't launch them, you know, head first. So that was a part of his growing up.
That's a great story, Judy. The first launch, which was the USS Pedo, really gave the Navy some concern because they weren't used to launching boats or ships sideways. The narrowness of the Manitowoc River required that. And it was absolutely true. The shipyard had a band. The band would be out there playing. In fact, celebrities visited when the war was really at its peak. Spencer Tracy visited and would speak to the shipyard workers. The band would play. The kids would get out of school. People would stand on the opposite bank, and they would launch this submarine. And you can actually go to our website. You can visit us and watch films of this. They launch with such a splash. You cannot imagine. People on the opposite bank got wet. This is a very, very common memory. It was an enormous event. And during the war, they were turning these boats out. It took longer to build them than this, but they were turning them out in less than a month, one every 28 to 30 days. It was absolutely incredible.
And to see those videos, which sound really amazing, you want to go to wisconsinmaritime.org. That's the website for the museum, wisconsinmaritime.org. We do have that linked from both the Larry's Links page on WPR.org and from our Facebook page, too.
That's great. And, you know, the best overall understanding that you can get of what was going on in terms of the war and what people endured and the sacrifices is with our documentary, Lost and Found, The Legacy of USS Lagardo. That's the story of the first American submarine that had been missing since the war to be found. We sent a dive expedition out to the Gulf of Thailand with John Chatterton and Richie Kohler and won 3 Emmys with this film. It's available on our website or on Amazon.com.
Great. And, you know, what Judy was saying about how the industry, and I think the museum as its successor, really plays a part in the life of people in the community. When I was telling a friend that I was going to be hosting the show today and that you, Norma, were going to be my guest, she, having grown up in Manitowoc, said, oh, I was a volunteer guide there. That submarine is 311 feet and 9 inches long. And so, you know, that to me said that, you know, it really is a point of pride and kind of a focal point for the community around Manitowoc Two Rivers.
It's an enormous sense of pride. We had famous boat builders and shipyards from the early 1800s. We built one of the most beautiful schooners on the lakes, the Challenge, which was compared to the great clipper ships of the East Coast. Very, very renowned. And the submarines were renowned for being the absolute best, the best constructed, which was a surprise to the Navy and a lot of people because they're very complex to build. At first, even Charles West, the owner of the shipyard, was nervous about making submarines.
We have a call from Tom in Waukesha. Tom?
Yes.
Hi.
Was the Kobiak, was that the sub that was in Milwaukee for the Navy Reserves?
Yes, it was. It was there on a day-to-day basis, and there are a lot of people who grew up remembering being a kid and cycling on down to watch the Cobia and the sailors, the guys in their uniforms. You can still do that. In May, the first weekend in May, that Saturday, we have our annual 28-boat memorial, and the Navy comes out. They come down from the Naval Operational Support Center in Green Bay in uniform. They are essentially manning the rails, much like they did during the launches. They're there in uniform. We honor our veterans. In fact, this year we're going to have the Navy from Washington, D.C. coming out to visit us.
And do a lot of those veterans who served on the subs, do they come as well?
Exactly. We have reunions. This year, the USS Jaleo will have its reunion in Manitowoc, and we're very, very eager to have that event because the Jaleo was the boat that one of our founders served on. Jerry Pilger was a young man who built submarines, graduated from Lincoln High School, built submarines in the yard, and then went off to serve on them with great distinction in the Pacific.
It seems like it must be somewhat bittersweet because so many of the veterans at this point are passing away because they're at an advanced age. But it must be that much more meaningful that those that are able to come are able to reconnect with people they may or may not have served directly with, but have that shared experience.
These veterans are so remarkable, Judith. When you talk to them and you say, oh my goodness, depth charge attacks on patrol, you didn't know what was going to happen next, losing a crew member as the Cobia did to a strafing run by a Japanese plane. And they look at you and they say, well, I did what I had to do and I came back and I raised a family and mm-hmm. I had my job. They're just the most unassuming men you can imagine.
Thanks for that call. And now we have Doug in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Doug.
Hello.
What's your question?
Hello?
Yes.
My uncle was on the Legato. For many, many years, you know, we had no idea what happened to him. I mean, basically, he was just lost in action. And, of course, you know, once we found out that the sub had been located, you know, and we're able to get online and see pictures of it. And, I also believe there's an artist rendition of it with exactly where the damage is from it. And, you know, there was just so many things that, you know, you could find out with regards to what happened to that. It was sunk by a ship called the Hatsukata. It just really, for our family, it brought a lot of closure, and just knowing, what he was through and his service and everything, it was just really an honor, to know about all these guys. And, of course, my father served on the Samuel Lee Roberts off the coast of Samar there, too, and there's quite a story behind that as well.
Doug, have you visited the museum?
I'm sorry,
Have you visited the Maritime Museum?
No, I have not yet. There's a Maritime Museum that's in Muskegon, Michigan, and they have the Silver Sides over there. I did get a chance to go on that sub, and there's a lot of history behind that sub as well. That is one of my goals, is to make it over here with the family and to be able to go to that museum. I certainly want to make it over there.
Thanks, Doug.
Well, Doug, it was an honor for us to help bring that documentary and that story to light. The veterans in the Milwaukee area had a lot to do with discovering that sub, and then the museum was proud to work with them to create this film. The film is so compelling, and I hope when you come over to the museum, you come on the Badger. The Badger is a living piece of history as well. The last, what we think may be, steamship that you can travel on, perhaps in the world. It's a remarkable thing. We stand on the shore there at Manitowoc, and we say you can see history arrive. It's a great trip. So I hope you come on over on the Badger.
And if you have a family connection to the submarine industry or to World War II, we'd love to hear from you. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Our on-air producer, Rachel Owens, is waiting to take your call. And you can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'd love to have you join the conversation. And now we have Marcia and Hazelhurst with a question about women in the sub industry. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, I recently made a new friend whose husband worked in the shipping industry in Manitowoc, and I was told that he was training women to weld, and I'm wondering if information is available as to, you know, were there women involved in building these submarines, sort of Rosie the Riveter kind of thing?
Great, thanks, Marcia.
There actually was a Rosie, the welder, who worked in our shipyards. Her story is told in the documentary, Lost and Found, The Legacy of USS Legato, because it's a story not only of the submarine and what happened to it and how the dive expedition found it, high-definition underwater film footage, but it's also the stories of the families, the survivors, who for decades never knew what happened to their loved ones. And it's the story of the shipyard workers. And Rosie tells her story about how she was trained to do this job. And at the end of the war, when they no longer needed the women, the men were returning, the men, of course, from the war. The thought was, well, the men are coming back. The men need these jobs. And they let a lot of the women go, who had been working in the yards, doing the non-traditional things. And Rosie still cries when she talks about losing that job and what it meant to her to be involved in that effort. So it's a very, very compelling part of the film. And the welding itself was remarkable. Charles West and the West Company, the Manitowoc Shipbuilding Company, developed new technologies that made those submarines the best built ever. In fact, sailors would go through all kinds of shenanigans to try to finagle their way on board a Manitowoc sub rather than Electric Boat from Groton, Connecticut, who had been building them far longer. They developed a jig, and they built the submarines in sections, essentially sections of tubes. And rather than have the welder try to get in awkward positions and work all their way around that circular seam, they built a jig that would turn the entire tube section. And the welder could sit in place, and that produced a really great seam, a really strong seam.
Thanks for that call, Marcia. And actually, let's go to Jean in East Troy, because I think her comment is a follow-up to that. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment that in the early 30s, my grandfather was a pattern maker, and he worked up at the shipyards. And the pattern maker made all the patterns for the metal things, the gears and all of those things, out of wood.
That is an incredible story, and it also brings together some of the training that existed in Manitowoc because of wooden shipbuilding. In fact, they not only built the patterns out of wood, but when Charles West came back from Washington, D.C., when they persuaded him, they had to persuade him to build submarines. He wanted to build destroyers. He said submarines were so complex, but then his workers assured him that they could do this. They wanted to do this. He came back and they built a submarine out of wood so that he could get his workers trained to working with those types of scale in the spaces to see how it all came together. I so wish we had that wooden submarine. Wouldn't that be incredible? And now, of course, this legacy continues. We have yacht builders from Berger, who, despite the fact that yachts now have steel hulls and all the latest technology, still do the most incredible joinery and wood crafting on the interiors of those yachts. And they are now helping to restore Cobia. So history always seems to come full circle, and the connections, people's stories, never cease to amaze me.
Thanks for that call, Jean. And we'll go to Kyle in Madison. Hi, Kyle.
Hi there. Norma, hi. I'm a chief in the reserve unit.
Hi.
And I would just like to say what a tremendous opportunity it is for us reservists that come from the reserve unit. And I've had the opportunity for so long to work on the Cobia. I'm a veteran submariner myself. And just to get the reconnection, I mean, for the last 10 years, we've been doing lots of restoration on that submarine. And to let your listeners know that we have three of the main engines that run, and air compressors that run, and a workable radio and radar, and getting around parts of the country where I've seen other submarines that are in states of museum type showing. What a tremendous opportunity is for people to really go back in history and see what a tremendous specimen of a museum Cobia is, and what a great honor it is, as an ex-submariner and a sailor myself, to reconnect back with our past and the veterans that were actually on the Cobia, and just to be given that opportunity. And I'd like to thank you for that.
Oh, Kyle, you are wonderful. We can't say enough about our reservists. The support we have from them is absolutely incredible. And when you are there during a ceremony with the flags flying and the veterans there and those engines start up, there is something so remarkable. The deck plate rumbles beneath your feet. The sound of that submarine engine coming to life. And the wonderful thing, too, is that this is a place where the public can come and they can see our men and women in uniform. You know, in a state like Wisconsin, we don't often have a lot of interaction with the men and women who are still serving. And the fact that they would come here and help us preserve this treasure, this icon of honor, is just remarkable. People can come to that ceremony. They can see our active duty sailors and officers. They can talk to the veterans. And what we try to do also, it relates to the story of the Lagardo. The Lagardo has another really unique Wisconsin connection. It rests at the bottom of the Gulf of Thailand, and there is a Harley-Davidson motorcycle on board that submarine. that belonged to the commander. We have photographs of him. They would disassemble it, put it through the hatches, store it aboard, and when they pulled into a Liberty port like Pearl Harbor or Perth, Australia, it would miraculously come to life.
So he could tootle around on his Harley.
On Liberty, wow. Right. And so we found a vintage Harley, a wonderful fellow who has one and comes and helps us celebrate. And we've started up the Harley at the same time we've started up the submarine engines on deck. And it's just wonderful.
Well, Kyle talked about one kind of event that you have, but I want to make sure people know about a really unique experience that you offer. People can actually stay overnight on the Cobia.
They can stay overnight. We're going to have three occasions this summer, and we can always plan more if they become booked, where families can come and stay overnight. We have almost every weekend during the school year, scout groups, youth groups, Girl Scouts coming to stay and sleep overnight. But during the summertime, the families can book that for themselves. It's a great way for someone to, even if they haven't served on the Navy or a submarine as such, to get engaged in a way that brings back history and the service of our men and women and make that real for a young person. It's a great way for grandparents to let their grandchildren know what it was like during World War II. That is just a wonderful thing you can do. You can bring your children, even if they're too young to sleep on board the submarine, you can bring them to the museum. We have 60,000 square feet. We have a waterways room where they can build boats and sail them through locks. We have an aquatic invasive species laboratory where they can see what it would like to be a marine biologist. Perhaps someone who will help us solve some of these aquatic invasive species challenges.
And I assume that there's some cost associated with the stays?
There is. The overnight stays are $39 per person, so you couldn't stay in a motel for that. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And then on June 25th and 6th, we're going to go to a different era in our history when we have River Rendezvous with Voyager canoes on the rivers. You'll have a chance perhaps to get in a Voyager canoe, the Dennis Sullivan, the 137-foot state flagship schooner will be here. We'll have cruises, deck tours, all kinds of things going on, a family freshwater arcade with just about every freshwater game you can think of, from water blaster target shoot to rubber ducky ring toss.
Great. I want to make sure we get to a couple more callers before we're done with Norma Bishop from the Wisconsin Maritime Museum. Let's go to Steve in Wausau. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I visited the museum on several occasions many, many years ago, but some of the greatest stories was that one of the workmen figured out that every time they launched sideways, the cribbing, all the big beams or wooden beams would float around or float away. Well, one of the workers there figured out he welded a template around the submarine or made it to fit it and put it, cables on it, and then they launched and that would sink to the bottom and they would just pull it back up and get it ready for the next submarine rather than having to chase those 2x4 or those logs all over the place.
That is a great story. There was so much innovation that happened at the shipyards, and part of that was due to Charles West. He was a very personable man. He really cared about his workers, and he really valued them. So when they had ideas, he was out in the shipyards, walking out on breaks and getting inspiration from them a lot of times. His sons worked in the shipyard. And that shipyard went on to become the basis of the Manitowoc Company, which is now a multinational global corporation in the crane business primarily. But that came about because of Charles West and the shipbuilding industry.
Thanks for that call, Steve. And we'll try to get Dave from Eagle River in quickly. Hi, Dave. Dave? Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Yes.
My father worked at Manitowoc for 42 years. He worked on all 28 of the subs that were built there, and he relayed a story to me how he actually got a deferment from being drafted to work at Manitowoc. That was serving his country by working on the sub.
That's true. Workers were needed in huge numbers. They even built a town, essentially a town of houses that still exists there. The streets are named after submarines. It's a fascinating time when workers and farmers came from all over the state. First, they were coming in buses and they were transporting them. Then they realized they had to build housing. So some of those houses are still there today.
So, Norma, if someone wants to come and visit the Wisconsin Maritime Museum, what's the best way to do it and what's the best way to get information?
The best way is to go to the website, which is www.wisconsinmaritime.org. They'll find a lot of information there. They can check us out on Facebook as well. They'll find our calendar of events. And, you know, it's a great way to start a vacation. Come to the Maritime Museum, bring your children, bring your canoes, kayaks, bicycles. We've got miles and miles of lakeshore bicycle trail that are absolutely exquisite. Manitowoc is a great place to start a vacation.
And remind us of those two events coming up in May and June.
We have May. The first Saturday in May will be our 28 boat memorial and the Lagardo Memorial. We have a chance to talk to veterans and to active duty sailors. So it's a great opportunity. Then on June 25th and 6th, we'll have the Dennis Sullivan in town. Come on down and see what the days of the lumber schooners were like. That's going to be a lot of excitement as well. A lot of things going on for young families.
I want to thank Norma Bishop of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum for joining me today. I know I learned a lot about this part of our state's history. Thanks, Norma.
Thank you, Judith.
Thanks, too, to our friends from the International Crane Foundation, with whom we started the show. Thanks to Rachel Orleans for being my on-air producer today, and to Larry Mueller for technical support. Larry will be back tomorrow behind the microphone, and he'll be joined by wildlife ecologist Scott Craven. I hope you'll stay tuned to the Ideas Network today for special Election Day coverage. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining me today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.